Thanks for listening to Chicago's Morning Answer podcast, sponsored by Signature Bank. Signature Bank takes pride in helping customers grow their business and provide unmatched banking expertise, custom financial solutions, and the industry's best technology. So whether you're a business looking for a deposit relationship or needs a ready source of financing, Signature Bank is the right bank for you. Call today at 773-467-5600 to hear how Signature Bank can help your business grow and thrive. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender. Top of the morning, Dan and Amy, and I was waiting for this before I made my decision on the vaccine, and I've got it. I was waiting for Andrew Lloyd Webber to weigh in, like I think a lot of us were.
What?
Yeah, Andrew Lloyd Webber.
He's touting, is he pro or con?
You may know him from such musicals as Cats. How many times did you see
meow,
it?
Meow.
How many times did you see
it? I live
Cats?
It every day.
I know, but how many times did you see the play? A lot, I bet.
No, I saw one time. I wasn't that big of a fan. And that movie was ghastly. Ugh.
Hmm. You have a better artistic eye than I thought.
Well, oh, thanks, Dan.
Yeah.
I continue on with my life now.
Andrew Lloyd Webber, I do think it's selfish to not get vaccinated. Because, I mean, look at it this way. I mean, you could just say, I would like to go out and have a drink tonight and drive home and accidentally I kill somebody. No, it's the same thing. But
wow, that's a bit of a stretch.
He said, no, I mean, it seems to me that nobody's going to go out and deliberately infect anybody with COVID, but it's completely wrong if we know the science. I was on the Oxford vaccine trial last year for this reason.
Oh.
We know that the vaccines are very effective, and we know that they are really, broadly speaking, unbelievably safe. I think you could argue it's your choice. I feel very strongly now that they're are really now people who have got to realize that by not having the vaccine, they're affecting an enormous number of people's jobs and livelihoods.
Hmm. Well, I go up to masked people on my street and say, God, you haven't gotten the vaccine yet?
You're a vaccine ambassador now?
I have helped people all over the world line up vaccination appointments. People in my church, people in the Netherlands who flew in to get a vaccine.
Maybe you'll get a couple of complimentary tickets to Jesus Christ Superstar from Andrew Lloyd Webber for your good work.
In Maryland now, they're handing out, it's a lotto, but it's a lot less. It's $40,000 if you get vaccinated compared to Ohio, which is you could win $1 million. But I did mine completely for political reasons.
Well, let's talk a little bit more about vaccinations. We're pleased to be joined by Dr. Alan Moy. I don't know how many Broadway musicals he's written, but he is the vice president of the John Paul II Medical Research Center. And we discussed a speech that he gave a few weeks back at the Union League Club for Catholic Citizens of Illinois. You heard us play clips from it where I thought he really nicely gave a primer on virology, both in terms of sort of the quality of different vaccines and some of the concerns that he had for different populations about the vaccines. Dr. Moy, thanks for joining us. Appreciate it.
Welcome. Pleased to be with you.
Just give us your perspective on these mRNA vaccines in particular, and what sort of your main hesitations are about them or main cautions to people are about them.
So I think that the mRNA vaccines and Johnson & Johnson vaccine, I think that the efficacy is overstated, and I think the safety is understated. The concern that I have is that the vaccines are treated as a once solution for everyone, and everyone's medical needs are very different, and their risks and benefits are very different with respect to the vaccines. So with regard to the mRNA vaccines, the patients who are at the highest risk are those who are the elderly, those who have chronic diseases. And so they carry the greatest benefit and the potentially the lowest risk. But the problem is that in these patients, their immunity could be very short-lived. So the immunity from any vaccine is dependent upon three types of types of immune protection mechanisms. One is the respiratory mucosal immunity. That's when you are inhaling a respiratory virus, you have a local respiratory immunity, and that helps to prevent the shedding and the transmission of viruses. You also have what's called a humoral immunity. That is the antibody levels are raised in your bloodstream, and this is the typical immunity that clinical trials use to determine success. And then lastly, and probably very, very importantly, is T-cell immunity. And this is what allows your body to provide a more longer-lasting immunity when your humoral immunity will ultimately decline. And in patients who received the mRNA vaccine, it was documented that those people who are between the ages of 55 and 70 will have their antibody immunity will decline by 50% within after 3 months. And those over the age of 70, their antibody immunity will drop by over 70%. But so if none of them, these patients, achieve T-cell immunity, and it's been well documented in the past that certain patients who have impaired immunity to vaccines, such as long-term smokers, diabetics, the elderly, cancer patients, and many people who have chronic diseases, they have problems with T-cell immunity, then if you've been vaccinated and you are one of those high-risk patients, you may have either poor immune protection or very short immune protection.
But if I could just interject, then the pushback I guess would be, well, okay, but you're talking about 55 and up, so you're talking about people that are in sort of that more vulnerable cohort, particularly a little bit towards the upper register of that range. And so if the immunity is only good for 3 months or it's only good for 6 months, and as you said, it starts to diminish, then that's what the booster shot's for. And maybe some immunity, even if it's fleeting right now, while there's more vaccine development in the direction of conferring T-cell immunity, provides us some time to get to the better, more lasting vaccine. So what's wrong with, again, still pushing the mRNA vaccines at present?
Well, there's no problem. The question is then a couple issues arise. What is the next mRNA vaccine? The mRNA vaccines are based on a gene therapy based on the spike protein. And the problem is that the virus is constantly mutating, and the spike protein is under the most selective pressure. And among these different variants, what you're seeing is a lot of differences in the spike protein. And so the vaccine has some variable protection against different variants. And so then the question is, then what mRNA vaccine do you use?
So then
against which spike protein?
Would you say that the concern that you have is more that that the vaccines provide a false sense of safety than it is that they provide a potential health risk? I mean, for people that are at least in that vulnerable cohort, most vulnerable cohort.
Well, my concern is that the people who, as a public health measure, the people who are getting these mRNA vaccines, is that it gives a false sense of security that we're rolling out a public health measure of trying to push mandates on a general population on whether they are protected or whether they should be wearing masks or not wearing masks, when many of these patients who have been vaccinated, and if they're in their high-risk cohort, there may be a period of time where they're not protected. So 6 months, 9 months later, are those people any more protected? And then those who were never vaccinated, I think that's a legitimate concern. And the people who were recovered from the COVID-19, they're actually far more protected than the ones who were vaccinated. Hmm. Because they see all those elements and mechanisms of immunity. But those people are the ones who are being asked to be vaccinated when it offers very little benefit and carries an increased risk.
Well, doctor, and, yeah, if you have been vaccinated, do you need to wear a mask? Or are masks not foolproof anyway, and that's just been theater this whole time?
It's the latter. I mean, the masks, whether it's cloth or surgical masks, offer no value whatsoever. And the masks have been studied in the past extensively for respiratory viral infections in very high-risk medical situations where patients who doctors and healthcare professionals were using these types of masks in settings where there was high incidence of respiratory viral infections, and they offered no protection. So essentially, these masks have four sizes of about 50 microns, and the virus size ranges between 20 to 500 nanometers. So you're talking about something that is on the order of 100 to 1,000 fold smaller than these masks can provide. So it's irrelevant whether you're vaccinated or unvaccinated that the mask offers no protection.
Something I learned from your talk at the Union League Club that I mentioned at the outset was this this sort of varying levels of immunity from vaccines. So and you sort of speaking to that. So these vaccines for COVID are of the subunit variety, and that's the least effective. That confers the least protection as compared to the attenuated live and the kill vaccines. And you suggested that with Operation Warp Speed, there was a decision made that the subunit offers the least amount of protection, but it's the potentially quickest we can get to market, even though we should be going for vaccines that provide T-cell immunity, as you were describing people have who've had the infection and recovered. Do you think that was an improper choice that was made, or or that expediency was sensible, just to, as I said before, to buy time for the better, more powerful, more longer lasting vaccines? And or is it just a matter that it wasn't disclosed? People don't have an appreciation for what these vaccines that are on the market now do and don't do, and they need to understand that.
So I think we had a conversation with the people who are running Operation Warp Speed, and the concern that we have was that we didn't have any problem with the need to produce and prioritize subunit vaccines because it was the quickest way to scale up production. But what concerned us was that there was no support in the long term for supporting attenuated live vaccines. And their reason was they wanted to get the vaccines out into clinical trials within 3 to 6 months. And so it was very clear that it was a very short-sighted decision because now we're dealing with variants around the world, and we don't really have a very good long-term biodefense solution against novel coronaviruses. So ultimately, these vaccines will have to be improved, and a attenuated live vaccine provides the strongest protection, and it also provides potential crossover protection against variants that may arise around the world, in that arise from both China and from the Middle East. And so that's what our institute has decided that it's going to pursue. it takes longer. There are a lot of challenges, but in the end, it has the best solution with best protection for a general population.
He is Dr. Alan Moy. He's a pulmonologist as well as the vice president of the John Paul II Medical Research Institute in Iowa. Dr. Moy, thanks so much for joining us. Appreciate your insights.
You're welcome.
And he joined us on our turnkey.pro answer line.